Blog Talk Radio.
Have some input. We have to do something about our situation.
Now, our slavery condition in the knee, we need to take full control of our lives in America today. So we must go past the psychological trauma of slavery that has made us collectively a dysfunctional, unnatural people, despite being free for over like 153 years since 1864-65, when the President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. But still, I must say that we are not free, because if we were free, we'd be natural like other people, looking after our own interests. And I want to say this, that our host and moderator, he's the author of a great book I'd like to recommend. It's called Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. And online you can get the book and read it out later, I'm sure. But the book is depicting a lot of the things that I personally have missed in my growing mature as a young man. And so a lot of the historical things that happened are highlighted in the book as quotes and statements and visions left by a lot of our leaders of the past who understood about the responsibility of freedom. Now, before we start off today, I'd like you to join me in prayer as I say this prayer. Would you please join me in prayer? With the name of our universal God, creator of the heavens and earth, Almighty God, our cherisher, sustainer, most gracious, most merciful, we alone, dear God, do we worship, and aid and comfort we all seek. Ask you show us a straight way, the way of those of your servants, whose achievement and sacrifice are not wrath, and who go not astray from the path of being human beings and not aliens, who don't under the love of responsibility take care of this society like we should. Give us the wisdom and teach us as we seek your love and forgiveness. Amen. Amen. Now, today's topic, I'm going to say this, is a very, very good topic, and it's one that we need to engage. The topic for this evening is the purpose of formal higher education being fulfilled for African Americans today. So before we begin, I'd like to bring on our host and moderator, and here he is. What's that, sir?
Well, good evening, and we want to welcome all of our listeners tonight. We hope that everyone is doing well. It's our honor, and it's our privilege to be able to come into your homes or in your cars or wherever you may be, listening to this program tonight. And the topic that we have chosen, as our co-host has already mentioned, is based on the fact that it appears that in the race for economic prosperity, African Americans in general are falling farther and farther behind today. It appears that in the race for economic prosperity, African Americans in general are falling farther and farther behind today. And so we ask the question, is the purpose of higher formal education being fulfilled for African Americans today? If not, why not? And before we turn the mic over to our guests, who've called in, because we invite our guests to call in so that we can hear what you have to say. But before we do that, we do want to just make a very brief commentary. As many of you may know, during slavery times in the southern part of the United States, it was actually illegal for black men and black women, black boys and black girls to be formally educated. It was illegal to teach a black child how to read or how to write, or to become acquainted with any of the school subjects. In fact, I remember being contacted many years ago when I was attempting to get in some form of communication with the family, the white family that owned the plantation where Booker T. Washington spent his childhood before freedom came. I don't like to say the family that owned Booker T. Washington, because I don't believe anybody can really own another human being. But he was on a plantation as a slave. And one of the chores that he was charged with as a young boy was to carry the school books of one of the daughters of the slave owner. The lady's name was Laura Burroughs. And Booker T. Washington was a bright young lad. And when they got to the schoolhouse and the little white children filed into the one-room school, Booker T. Washington was told that he had to stay outside. And when the teacher saw him peeping through the window, trying to see what was going on, trying to see what was being put on the blackboard, to listen to what was being said, she told him to get away from the window. And he said later, when he wrote his autobiography, Up From Slavery, he said to be able to sit in that classroom and to be taught, to be educated, for him would be like going to heaven, to be just like going to heaven. That's how much he felt left out of the process of getting a formal education. So later, when I did make contact with a member of the family of the people that owned the plantation where Booker T. Washington experienced this injustice, one of the relatives said that she had a letter or some report from an interview that someone had done with Miss Laura Burroughs. And by this time, Booker T. Washington had grown up and had become famous. And so Miss Burroughs was asked, did she teach Booker T. Washington? Did she ever take the time, or did she go around the law and teach him how to read and write? And she said, now this is an older white woman who had been actually helped Booker T. Washington, I understand, gave her money in her old age. But remember, we're still talking about the old South, even in the 1890s and early 1900s. Attitudes don't change that easily. And Miss Burroughs said, no, I'd never teach a nigger how to read or write. And that was the way that our people were oppressed educationally. And later, after the Civil War, when our people had freedom, these laws were lifted, and black people rushed into schoolhouses all over the South. They couldn't build schoolhouses quickly enough to accommodate all of the black people, not only children, but also adults that wanted to become educated. And so it was decided that there needed to be teachers, black teachers, to teach the increasing numbers of black people, adults and children, that wanted to learn how to read and write. And so it was necessary to establish colleges to prepare teachers to teach these children. And here's where higher education became available to black people, particularly in the South. A few black people had the opportunity, not many, but a few, to go to colleges up north at places like Oberlin and also Antioch College in Ohio and even Harvard University. But that was very, very rare. So these missionary colleges church colleges were established to get a teacher's corps to go out and teach in the school. But what was the purpose of their education? Was it to help the people learn how to become independent, how to become self-sufficient, how to become part of the economic progress in the New South, the industrialization of the South after the war? No, it wasn't for that purpose at all, except in a place like Tuskegee, which was not formed by these organizations, but was formed, even though it was chartered to create an educational opportunity for black children, Booker T. Washington formed it, Tuskegee, that is, to give our people an equal shot at becoming economically prosperous. So the question we're going to turn over to our audience now, we'll repeat. First, it appears that in the race for economic prosperity, African Americans in general are falling farther and farther behind. Is the purpose of higher formal education being fulfilled for African Americans today? If not, why not? And I see, Stephanie, that you're on the line. I believe that is you. I hope it's you, but we do have a caller from your area code. And so we'd like to invite you to come on and to give us your opinion of what we just commented on.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
You know what? I heard some statistics, and I believe that they are real, and I am so happy to share this. But they say, according to United States statistics, that the highest group of college graduates in the United States belongs to black females. They are really taking over in that field. And I do know a lot of young black girls that are just doing it. You know, my granddaughter is one. She hasn't graduated yet, but she's going for her master's, and they're talking a PhD with her, too. But I know some, but they say that that's who is holding the highest ranking group of graduates in the United States. That maybe they want to keep it hush-hush, but it kind of reminds me of another statistic that was out some years back, and they were saying that punk rockers versus rappers, that these young rappers have invested their money so wisely, it's just amazing, and that the punk rockers have squandered theirs. And so it doesn't surprise me. A lot of these young black people, they pretty much have their head on their shoulders. You know, there was a thing that was said, the younger people would be smarter but less wise. And I think that that's true, too. So they have what it takes. And when they apply it right, it'll come out right for them. I'm proud of those who are graduating college and way up there where they're supposed to be. I'm just giving them two thumbs up. And I'm hoping and praying that more young people, and they don't have to be young, will continue to strive towards a higher education as high as they can get it. Thank you.
Stephanie, thank you so very, very much. Those were very profound thoughts, and it's encouraging what you've said. It is very encouraging. We want to, for the benefit of those who are listening via the internet and those who may come on, since this is going to be archived, recorded and archived, we want to go ahead and repeat our topical question, and then we want to turn it over to our co-host for his comments. So let me repeat the question again. It appears that in the race for economic prosperity, the key word here is economic prosperity, African Americans in general are falling farther and farther behind today in the race for economic prosperity. So the question that we ask is the purpose of higher education being fulfilled? Is the purpose of higher education being fulfilled for African Americans today? And if not, why not? So, Stephanie, we thank you for your comments. And now we want to turn it over to our co-host, Brother Doctor of Self-Esteem, Haleem Mustafa. Brother Dr. Haleem Mustafa, your comments, please.
Thank you, sir, Professor. This is quite interesting, the idea of economic prosperity. I would look at our situation. We are like, in terms of our prosperity compared to our poverty, we're losing on the scale. So our prosperity is not matching our poverty. Matter of fact, our poverty is greater, and it should be reversed. See, I really understand the ideas of what your great-grandfather said, that learning is like going to heaven. And the people who want to keep us ignorant, they know that too, right? When you teach and show a person how to fish, as the Bible says, they can survive and prosper. But when you just feed them, you know, and you actually control them, and you could, give them food that make them weak, and give them food that make them think, or give them food that make them sick and die. So we're looking at the whole situation, and we got to really look at it seriously. This food and water and other kind of things are affecting the mental ability of the retention of information. And we have to look at a holistic way of addressing, right? So, you know, even the mental word of a nigger, all right, is something that is demeaning a human being. It's like saying today, like you're talking about, like a faggot, a homosexual, or a gender bender. You know, that's like politically incorrect. But why shouldn't the ideas of saying that word nigger be also politically incorrect too? Because why, if we're going to today be equal as people who have evolved, and as our country hopefully is headed to more unity and not more insanity, allowing things to happen that separate the people, right? And so, you know, I'm optimistic, I'm realistic, and I'm saying that we folks who got melanin in our skin tone, we have a real job to do. And until we do it, we cannot save our youth. I mean, the sacrifices have to be made, right? We have to stop the things that are destroying us, the behavior of drug and alcohol, extremism. Socially, we're imitating white people who never really the way that they succeed, right? They only show us things that is a bad behavior. So our behavior now is not really reflecting, and I hear what the sister said about the rappers compared to the punk rockers, right? I appreciate that. But we got to get these rappers to stop talking all that trash I call it phony baloney, where they're not really talking of real life that they're going through. It's more vicariously gangster worshiping. They're acting like pranksters, like they're all this tough guy, all this stuff, but the message is not reflecting the cultural of our people. So it's time that we all look in the mirror and ask ourselves, in the time that I've been here as his co-host, that I know that he's like a talking book. He knows history like I know, like how to drink water, right? He got it down. And I'm going to say I appreciate and respect you for being so straight shooter and talking. But I want to go further. The last thing I want to say is this one. So the women are always smarter than guys, and I always tell us, my daughter's two, my wife, right? And I watch very closely the behavior of women. And women are much, much smarter than men. And that's something that men got to wake up and realize. Are we spending too much time in the gym trying to be a basketball player, in the baseball field, trying to be a superstar baseball player, or the idea of football player? See, we're spending too much time in sports, and our minds are depleting or being replenished from the learning of discipline that actually increases your mental strength. So all this sports activity is going to a waste of developing these young people, these young men. And I like to say, like the last poet said, they says the word niggers are playing basketball, football, and baseball while the white man's cutting up they balls. Niggers, all niggers. Yeah, that's what he said, and a lot of us feel like that. So, I'm gonna shut up, sir, and I pray to God that I wasn't offensive to anyone. I'm only saying that we got to deal with the truth now, and we got to save the youth. That's my position. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Brother Dr. Halim Mustafa. For those who are just joining us or via the Internet, we want to repeat our topic for this evening. And that is this. It appears that in the race for economic prosperity, African Americans in general are falling farther and farther behind today. And the question is asked, is the purpose of higher education, higher formal education, that's the education where you take classes for credit and ultimately you get a degree, associates, bachelor's, master's, doctorate of some type, is the purpose of higher formal education being fulfilled for African Americans today? And if not, why not? Now, what I'd like to do is just read a report. And this has probably not changed for the better in the last 4 years. But this is a report that was issued by the Washington Post in 2013. And it says in this report that the black-white economic gap hasn't budged in 50 years. And it continues by saying that on the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, we are updating our look at how the economic disparities between whites and blacks have persisted over the past half century. And he goes on to say that even as racial barriers have been toppled and the nation has grown wealthier and better educated, the economic disparities separating blacks and whites remain as wide as they were when marchers assembled on the Washington Mall in 1963. And according to a chart that the researcher drew, says that the black unemployment rate has consistently been twice as high as the white employment rate for 50 years. It says back in 1963, the unemployment rate was 5% for whites and 10.9% for blacks. Today, it's 6.6% for whites. And, of course, it may be different now because that's been 4 years ago. But then it said it was 6.6% for whites and 12.6% for blacks. And then it says for the past 50 years, black unemployment has been well above recession levels. And then it goes on to say that, indeed, black America is nearly always facing an unemployment situation that would be labeled a particularly severe recession if it was characterized for the entire labor force. From 1963 to 2012, the annual black unemployment rate averaged 11.6%. This was higher than the average annual national unemployment rate during the recession period by 6.7%. And then it goes on to say, The gap in household income between blacks and whites hasn't narrowed in the last 50 years. And further, it says, the wealth disparity between whites and blacks grew even wider during the Great Recession. I think they refer to the 2008 recession. It says that the wealth gap between minorities and whites has not improved over the past three decades. And what they mean when they say minorities in that code language, they're talking about black people particularly. From 1983 to 2010, average family wealth for whites has been about six times that of blacks and Hispanics. The gap in actual dollars growing as average wealth increased for both groups. And the Great Recession exacerbated that gap as blacks and Hispanics were hit especially hard. And I say this, I don't have the statistics on it, but I would imagine that during the great bubble burst in 2008 in the housing financing market, that it was mostly, proportionately speaking, black people that lost their homes, because this whole bubble was about the loans, what they call subprime loans. In other words, people that did not actually qualify according to normal standards for lending money for houses, but they were allowed to go ahead and get mortgages anyway, even though there was serious doubt if they were going to be able to keep up the payments, because we know that black people are always the last hired and the first fired. And so in addition to that, there were these increasing mortgage financing rates, these balloon interest rates that began to hit the black homeowners almost like a big tsunami. And our people, as we were losing ground in terms of holding on to jobs, as the recession squeezed the belts of the employers, the last hired and the first fired were the black people, who now didn't have the money to make the mortgage payments, even if they hadn't gone up, and now they did go up. And so our people were like lost in the tsunami of economic, what I would call, disaster. And finally, it says black children are far more likely than whites to live in areas of concentrated poverty. Arrested progress in the fight against poverty and residential segregation has helped concentrate many African Americans in some of the least desirable housing in some of the lowest resourced communities in America. And those poor neighborhoods have a way of perpetuating inequality. Then also poor black neighborhoods also have environmental hazards that impact health. A very serious one is higher exposure to lead, which impedes learning, lower earnings, and heightens crime rates. And while rates of lead exposure have been declining for all races, African American children continue to have the highest exposure rates. And our schools are more segregated today than 1980. Although the share of black children in segregated schools had dropped to 62.9% by the early 1980s, the subsequent lack of commitment by the federal government and multiple Supreme Court decisions antagonistic to school desegregation have led to a reversal. Why does that matter? Promoting school integration, according to this scholar or this researcher, is important because now, as a half a century ago, segregated schools are unequal schools. The more non-white students a school has, the fewer resources it has. A 10 percentage point increase in the share of non-white students in a school is associated with a 75% decrease in per student spending. I'm going to repeat that. And I see we have a caller who just joined us, so I'm going to interrupt this for the benefit of our caller from the 251 area code just to give the topic again so you can be brought into our conversation. The topic for tonight, maybe you saw it on the internet, but the topic is, it appears that in the race for economic prosperity, African Americans in general are falling farther and farther behind today. is the purpose of higher education is the purpose of higher formal education being fulfilled for African Americans? And if not, why not? And that's what we're addressing. And we're reading a 3-year-old study, but as I said, I don't believe that these statistics have improved over the last, it's actually a 4-year-old study. I don't believe that these statistics have improved over the last 4 years. And it says a 10 percentage point increase in the share of non-white students in a school. In other words, as the school becomes more black, as the whites move their children out of the predominantly black neighborhood schools because of the non-enforcement of desegregation policies from the 1970s through the 1980s, then the money goes with the students that are leaving. The white students, the money goes where they go. And then it goes on to say that the marriage gap has widened over the past 50 years. It says marriage rates have fallen for all groups since the 1960s, but more sharply for blacks than for whites. In 1960, 74% of white adults were married, as were 61% of black adults. But by 2011, the black marriage rate had fallen to 56%, that of the white rate. 55% of whites were married, compared with 31% of blacks. Relatedly, the U.S. Census recently reported that 52%, and I believe it's higher now, of black children are living in single-parent homes versus just 19.9% of white children, and that figure probably has gone up too. And it says, why does any of this matter? Because marriage is considered an indicator of well-being, in part because married adults are economically better off, although that may reflect the greater propensity of affluent adults to marry. So I'm going to stop right there. We go on with more data about incarceration and other things, but that's enough for right now to reinforce the issue, which is the purpose of higher education, higher formal education, being fulfilled for African Americans? So let me just say this, and I'm going to turn it back over to you, our participants tonight. Remember in the beginning of the program, and this is for the benefit of the person that just joined us, the guest that just joined us, we said that the African American people were not allowed to become formally educated in the South at all for 250 years, not allowed to learn even to read a newspaper. We were kept in the dark about what was going on around us, other than what we could actually see on the plantation where we lived or hear about on our plantation or one of the neighboring plantations that some of the visitors may have been talking about that we overheard. And then came freedom, and we were allowed to go to school. And we crowded these schools because many of our people went to school because they wanted to learn the Bible. There were many adults that were going to school just so they could learn to read the Bible, because they had been taught that the Bible would set them free, that they would have a better life if they learned about Jesus and about the Bible. But other people went because they wanted to have a better economic situation. And so many people went to college thinking that they would be able to get teaching jobs or minister's jobs. And they did prosper in accordance with their education in many cases. But the general population of black people didn't prosper. And today we have many people graduating from college, and they're doing fairly well. I know I am, thank God, because I persisted until I had earned a substantial amount of college education. But most of our people don't have that advantage. They don't have the advantage for many reasons that I'm not going to go into. But in general, over 90% of our people are living in some form of poverty, either real poverty with their own subsistence from the county or the state or the federal government, or they're one paycheck away from being in that situation. That's poverty. So what we're going to do is ask our caller from the 251 area code, your last three digits of your phone number, 040. We want to bring you on and ask if you've heard enough to be able to make a comment, and if you have, please go ahead.
Yes, how you doing?
Doing fine, Paulette. How are you doing? I recognize your voice, but I didn't recognize your phone number.
Oh, yes, I'm doing just great. I was just thinking about, I was part of a vacation Bible school recently, and one of the deacons got all of the students that was like maybe 12, 13, and 14 age group, and he was telling them about saving money, the purpose of money, and how money works. And it has been my experience that when I work with older people, especially in the Black community, they really don't understand how money works. They really don't. You know, you ask them, what is a credit score? They don't know. And I was thinking back to my own understanding with my parents. When I was growing up, that was never taught at my house. My mother, whenever she purchased something, she always purchased it with cash. And, you know, she didn't make, she was a school bus driver, and she also, you know, worked, you know, for the white people, you know, cleaning houses. So we didn't have a lot of money circulating, but my mother was a very good steward of her money. But I have noticed with Black people, what we do is whatever money that we have on Friday at the end of the week, we'll go to the casino, and we think we're going to double it. And we're not going to double it because we're not going to beat the casino. The casino got to be on top, because if you look at all that luxury that's in a casino, they cannot afford to lose. And even if a person win big, like $50,000, and they post it on a big billboard, this person may have been over there numerous of times and have lost a lot of money. So really, all you're getting back is the money that you've already pumped in there. And also, too, they go to casino, and the casino, they have these little tricks up their sleeve. You know, he's thinking that, oh, if you come over here, we give you free rooms. But they put everything on a card, and they keep up with you. They say you come over here on your birthday, and you can eat free. But 9 times out of 10, when you go over to the casino, you're not coming alone. You may bring some friends, and they will gamble. So really, the casino is going to get your money, but you think that you're going to win. And also, too, they got payday loans, you know, because I live near the casinos, and they got, you know, payday loans just about on every corner now. And it's just like a revolving door. And we think that we're going to pay this money, get this money, and pay it back right away. And the next thing you know, you got one payday loan to pay off another payday loan to pay off another payday loan, and you can never get caught up. And I believe that the reason that the marriage rate in Black people are so low is because the husband and wife, they be fighting a lot. And I believe the reason they be fighting a lot, they're not on the same page financially. You know, you just can't have your paycheck. They say, for example, if you're both working, you can't have him doing his thing with his paycheck and she's doing her thing with her paycheck. There's got to be a meeting of the mind where you can sit down and say, look, these are the bills, and this is are the debits, and these are the credits, and we cannot afford this because of that. You know, how you can make your money stretch. And I believe that if you're on the same page financially, I think that could straighten a marriage. And if you're not on the same page, And the reason, some of the reasons that you would not be on the same page, you say for example, you know, sometimes the grass always looks greener on the other side of the fence. You want to live your life with just, see if you can live off just one paycheck. You know, don't go out and buy a home that's going to take both of your incomes. Because because I learned, you know, when my husband and I, we purchased our home, the real estate lady, she said, never use both of your incomes to pay for the house because you will learn to hate the house. You know, because you say, look, we didn't have this house note. But she said, always get a house you can afford, get a car you can afford. But it has been my experience that with black people, we want to get more than what we can afford only to show off that we got it. And it really doesn't make sense. And as far as higher education, I believe that it depends on what you're majoring in. In my case, for example, I majored in nursing. And I started off at $2.10 an hour back in 1975. And after that, I went on to college, and I graduated in 1986. And I think they started me off at $8.12 an hour. And when I retired, I was almost at $30 an hour. So, but it's a thing where, depending on what you're majoring in, you can make a good salary. But regardless of whatever you major in, you have to be a good steward of that paycheck and make that paycheck stretch. Never go out and buy a car and they're saying and you, with bad credit, because why buy a car at 26% when you, if you had good credit, you can get that car at 3%. But you have to understand how money works. And I think we fall short in teaching our young people about how money works and the importance of holding on to it and making it stretch. So that's my view on that.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you very much, Paulette. That's great. I'm going to turn it back over to you, Stephanie, and see, do you have some comments on what Paulette just said or something else related to the topic? We're going to be winding down here in about 10, 15 minutes. Yes, go ahead, Stephanie.
Yes, sir. Thank you, young lady, for sharing that, and you made something run through my mind that I'd like to share. You are absolutely right. We need to know and educate more on how money works, because when we sold our first home, we got a real estate agent, you know, to do our willing and dealing, and it cost us $23,000 that went into this real estate agent's pocket. But then, you know, I was educated a little bit more, so the second time we purchased a home, I didn't use no real estate agent. I went and got a lawyer who was knowledgeable in real estate. And I got that lawyer through what's that firm? Anyway, it's a firm that whenever you need a lawyer, they have one for you. But when I got the lawyer,
prepaid lawyer.
Excuse me.
Is that prepaid lawyer?
LegalZoom. Yeah, through the entity LegalZoom, and LegalZoom only costs like $200 a year. And then when you need a lawyer or anything like that, they have one for you in whatever city and things like that. So it cost us $2,000 or $3,000 for a lawyer to take the place of the real estate agent. Therefore, we saved a whole $20,000 And I believe that's the type of thing that this young lady is talking about, and being educated on knowing more about money and being money wise. So thank you. You just made me think of that. Man.
Okay, Stephanie, that's great. Did you have more?
Well, I'd like someone else to share.
Okay, well, thank you, Stephanie.
I'm an extrovert. I can run my mouth. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. We're gonna go ahead and let Brother Haleem, we're getting ready to wind up in a minute. We're going to let Brother Haleem, would you like to comment on what Paulette said or what Stephanie said or what I said when I gave those statistics or anything related to our topic at this time? Now, I'd like to mention this before you come on. Now, you work very, very closely with some very, very, what I would say, dedicated and committed young people that are following your lead in terms of becoming modern-day achievers. So these young people may or may not be, at this time, are pursuing formal higher education. But let's say that you were going to advise these young people who may be thinking about engaging in formal higher education, what would you tell them that the purpose of their completing a formal higher education program should be, in your opinion?
Well, let me say, first of all, the discipline is critical. The discipline, that makes a difference. And when they become disciplined, in the study of what they're focusing on as their gift, genius, or blessing that God has given them as their natural gift, whether it's writing, speaking, whatever academic interest that they have, they can make it a success with discipline. That's what's important, right? Now, I want to just comment in terms of some of the comments about the, you know, the marriage situation has dropped off. And this is one of the things that we address with these young people about the ideas of how to find a good wife, a good husband, how to stay happy in love, and how to not, you know, have a short-term idea of relationship built around sex and not love and trust. So we must have, you know, example conversations with these young people and show them what the journey of love is all about, right? Because, you know, in the short term, you might, you know, have a woman that's really, like, looking pretty, pretty, pretty. But when it comes down to surviving and knowing how to save money and stuff, she may not have that the discipline, and she's going to spend it in fingernails and some long extra hair that she got from Korea, you know? And that becomes a overload on some of the things that, you know, we can save on. And I want to say that in black people's economic wealth building, we have a $2.4 trillion GNP, gross national product, $2.4 trillion. That's more than, like, a lot of countries, if you look at the countries that the United Nations has listed as countries. We'd probably be in the top 10, right? Now, we also have $1.4 billion gross national spending power. Now, that $1.4 billion, it has went up, you know. And we have money, but we don't have common sense no more, right? We're trusting the wolf to huff and blow the house in, stuff like that, the huff and the puff and I blow your house in. We're trusting these white bankers. We're trusting these white people, and I'm not being racist or cynical. I'm just telling you the fact. We would rather spend money with them to advise us instead of going somewhere in a community that has some intelligent black people or minority people who understand the conditions and will give you advice even for free. But we'd rather spend money on these white people who don't give a F about us. And I'm sorry, I didn't say the word. I just said F. They don't care about us. They just don't really care. And we keep being fooled, right? So I'm going to say that we have to stop crossover marriages. Now, I'm not saying love don't come in different colors, but we're crossing over so much, y'all put a fence on the other side because it looks more brighter, and we're giving them these relationships, and that's all about taking our money. You know historically what's been the case. When they had Joe Louis, they sick woman on him, and she take all his money, and now he live poor. He used to be a champion, now he's a doorkeeper at the casinos. He's not here no more, but that's the reality. So I believe that black love, minority love, has to be expressed to say this love, even though it don't look like the TV commercials that everybody is kind of leaning toward, because of vicariously living through the TV and all the imagery, vicariously, we live in a love fantasy and wanting somebody who don't look like us and don't have the same experience, and we're trusting them, and they don't really care about us, but then they take us because they say, you got a little money, Mr. Rapstar or Miss Rapstar, let me get close to you and get your money, you know, and then they make a divorce and make it all formal and take half your money, Halle Berry, did you listen to me? So, anyway, I'm just saying to you, to you all and myself, be wise with your money. Be wise with your trust. Be wise in the people that you let get in your circle of trust and people that you confer with, right? So last thing, education is great, but ultimately you got to apply it. If you don't apply it, you're wasting time. So we have our young people going to college, learning some surface things, but don't get digging deep. You got to dig deep in terms of what is the use of this education that you have. What is your mind potential? What is your genius? What can you really do with a penny? Do you know how to save a penny until you can add up that penny and make it worth a dollar? That's common sense, basic knowledge that our people used to have. We used to say a penny banks, and we saved money through penny banks. Now we got thousands of dollars and thousands of dollars. We're not saving none of that one because we're just vicariously living like white people, and that's my last comment. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to close in a minute, but I do want to make a public announcement. This is something I've been considering all day. If you saw our advertisement for this program on Facebook, and I have a lot of Facebook friends, and they're not all African-Americans, and this is out for the global population that goes on Facebook and is able to go on my page. I said this is an African-American family discussion, but I've been thinking about this all day long, especially after having seen on television last weekend the tremendous numbers of non-African-Americans that were representing, to a great extent, the feelings, the sensitivities of many, many, many African-Americans concerning the heroic monuments of people that were slave masters that fought to perpetuate slavery of black people. Many of those people, some as the lady who was killed, were not black people at all, but they were people that sympathized with this sensitivity about this slave heroic, I suppose, uplifting, slave master uplifting. So I'm going to say that in the future, and this is for all of those that are listening that are not African Americans, I'm open to this discussion to everybody. I know I have a very, very big commitment to uplifting African-Americans. But, you know, we're all one family. And I know this from my own experience. If you have 7 or 8 children in the family and one of the children is having problems making the basketball team and you've got a couple of boys in the family, maybe girls too. Girls can play basketball just with boys. In many cases, they can beat boys. But you may have a couple of children that are really good, that they've learned the skill set, and they can show this to one that's having trouble how to improve his or her game, you know, because they want to see the family do well. They want to see this member of the family that needs help come up to speed. And I know for a fact, and this was definitely true in Booker T. Washington's relationship with the white people that helped him to build Tuskegee, that there are many people that would like to see, because they have good hearts and they would like to see the problem resolved, this economic disparity problem resolved. And they can give advice. They can give a lot of good advice because they are practicing those principles. They've been taught since childhood to practice these principles that Brother Halim, or Dr. Halim, has been alluding to that many of our people don't get at home. So we're going to open this program up starting next Saturday to everybody. In fact, you can come on right now if you're listening via the internet. I'll give you about 5 or 10 minutes to come on, because if I don't see any more people come on, we'll just go ahead and we'll close it out for tonight. But I think it's time for us to open up our hearts and our minds to see ourselves as one big family. And we may have some members of the family that really need some extra coaching, because one thing is for sure, if we start separating ourselves and alienating ourselves from people just because of the various skin colors that we have, we'll never be able to rise above what you saw last Saturday in Charlottesville, Virginia. So we've got to develop. We're Americans first, and we've got to develop past the narrow blinders that have kept us in the situation that was represented last weekend. And I've been pondering over this all afternoon today, but I've come to the conclusion as of this program tonight that we're going to open this program up. We're still going to focus on trying to uplift the black people, because we need to do that. I'm very, very concerned when I look at the ghettos that I traveled through America, even in Washington, D.C. I went to Washington, D.C. last year, actually, in 2016, in March, Martin Luther King Avenue, I believe it's Avenue, not Boulevard, but Martin Luther King Avenue is one of the worst conditioned streets in the city of Washington, D.C., named after this great, illustrious world leader. And yet, the people that go there to do business, to do whatever they do, don't have enough respect for Martin Luther King to pick up the trash in the streets, in the street that honors his name. So that's something we need to keep working on. I can't get away from the need to keep working on trying to uplift our people, but I don't want to do it to the exclusion of help or advice that we can get from outside of our immediate family group. So I'm just saying that. So now we're going to go ahead, and I'm going to, as we get ready to close, go back around. Stephanie, I'm going to go to you now and see if you would like to make some closing comments before we do sign off. So, Stephanie, you're on.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I'm going to try to be real brief because I know other people want to talk. But I thank you for mentioning that, because, see, people nowadays of all nationalities, especially whites, are standing up for our black rights. They are being beaten in the place of us, and they are continuing on. And I thank them for knocking down these statues, because a friend of mine put up on Facebook today, I haven't seen a statue of Nat Turner yet. Why haven't they put up one of Nat Turner? And it's because they don't want a memory of that, yet that is history. So this type of stuff needs to go into the history books or into the museums and not on the street, because that's not something to be upholding. I just thank all the white people who have and other nationalities who are joining us with our struggle to hopefully push aside a lot of this nonsense. Horrible racism. You know, me and myself, I go to an all-white church, and they are wonderful people. They really are. And my church they had a goal to raise $5,000 to help some children in Africa. And see, these white folks have money. They raised about $40,000 in no time. And they went over there in South Africa, and they built I know they did a school, they dug wells, and the clinic. But they also help in our community here, too. So if there are good white people and people who, you know, they're not the ones that did this to us. You know, their ancestors did. And so a lot of times we need to stop being prehistorical monsters on all white people, because it's not all white people. there are some out there just shamefully racist, and that's what we're trying to get rid of, starting with the president, I don't mind saying. But I'll just move right along, and thank you for mentioning that, because that's important to me and to other people. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. And now we're going to go to our brother, Dr. Halim, for your closing comments, and then we're going to wrap up the show for tonight. So, brother Dr. Ali Mustafa, please go ahead, and let's hear from you now.
Yes, thank you very much. And Stephanie, I really appreciated your beautiful comment about the coming out of that anthropologist negative behavior on all levels. Dr. George Washington Carver, I'm going to mention, because I'm working on a mission that is involving him in a federal holiday that he was given way back in 1945 by Congress. Now, this federal holiday is very significant. Black people did not give it to him. White people voted, which was the 79th United States Congress, they voted to establish January 5 as a federal day of honor, recognizing Dr. Carver's contributions to America primarily and to the world. Now, Dr. Carver, his life, his legacy, and his legend was all about helping people, not based on color, not based on religion, just simply people. He saw the need of poverty in people, and he helped the black and white farmers live better in Alabama and stop fighting as they were taking their product to the mills for selling to make a living. Excuse me. So, point is, January 5th, 2018, we're doing a national telethon all across the country in different city venues. And I say, if anyone want to contact me, certainly feel free to reach me. And if it's not inappropriate, I'd like to get my number or my email. Quite easy. Is that okay, Professor? Do that.
You go right ahead.
Oh, thank you, sir. So my phone number, 24/7, 365, is area code 650-921-5131. I repeat, 650 area code 921-5131. And I have an email that's dr, like doctor, with no period, dr Sam, like S-A-M, common spelling Sam, Uncle Sam, and then well, W-E-L-L, I'm well, I'm not sick, so drsamwell@gmail.com. So this telethon, and one last comment I say, is when we learn to look back at the past and find the legacies whose life represent the spirit of what it was and means to be an American beyond the color, and your great-grandfather, Professor, was one of those iconic leaders. Dr. Carver was one of those iconic leaders. There was a lot of people like certainly at that time, like Napoleon Hill, as another example. You know, there were people who had sensitivity to helping people of other colors. And so we today have to do that. If not, we're going to look back at history and say we had a chance to make this country and this world reflect the diversity of God's love in all people. And that's my last comment. So stay human. Don't be an alien. Learn how to smile. It's not going to hurt you. Just smile and be happy. God's peace and blessings. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Dr. Halim Mustafa, the Doctor of Self-Esteem. So I'm going to close with a reading, a very short reading from my book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. And I'm going to invite all of you to send me your order for copies of this book. The book is $20 plus postage. And you can send your order in by text message. Many people today can do text messages, so that's an easy way for me to get the orders to this following number, area code 706-399-5006. So if you don't have anything handy to write the number down, I'm going to read a short passage. It's not going to even take 3 minutes, and so I don't give you time to go find something to write the number down, because I will repeat the number before we close the show. But I want you to send your order in via text message. Make sure you put your name and how many copies of the book that you want to order. And I'll go ahead and contact you at that number to make arrangements where to ship the book and for payment arrangements. So I want to read from this book, which is the book that I have authored, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, A Message That Will Change America. And I'm quoting from the book. African Americans are now living at another crossroads, similar to the crossroads that we faced at the end of chattel slavery. At that time, we had no guidance on how to become self-sufficient, because without the ability to read, we could not study books on how the white people had made themselves collectively wealthy. We did not even know, in most cases, what the economic value, our economic value to the slave owner was. He never took us collectively into his confidence and said, quote, look, Negro, I bought you for $500 when you were a small boy, and I can get $2,000 for you now that you are a skilled horse groomer or skilled cook or skilled carpenter, whatever the case might have been. So after deducting the cost of what I have paid to feed you for 10 years and what I spent on the meager clothing that I gave you, I have made an astronomical profit of 400% on my investment in your black body, unquote. As slaves, we as a people were conditioned to attach no value to our own selves as human beings. Our thinking was corrupted totally with the concepts of inferiority, worthlessness, and self-hatred. This was the result of a demonic design implemented unrelentingly for 2.5 centuries by white Americans, rich and poor. Of course, there were many, many notable exceptions, without a doubt. Now we have economic knowledge at our fingertips. We know that if we have a college education which costs at least $50,000 to $100,000, we should be able to earn a minimum of $50,000 per year using our college gained skills. If we calculate that we will work on a job for an employer for 40 years at least, then we have an economic value of no less than $2 million. That's individually. If we calculate that at least 10% of our adults, the talented 10, according to the name that Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois calls the college-educated people, if we calculate that at least 10% of our adults should have college degrees, and we have 20 million African-American adults, then we have 2 million with college degrees, each with an economic value of $2 million. And at this rate, and this is only including the economic value of 1/10 of our adults, we have a collective economic value at any given time of $4 trillion. Now, where is that $4 trillion to be found? It is back in the hands of the descendants of our former slave masters, because their design is to keep us in economic slavery so that our economic value becomes his wealth, just as it was in the days of slavery when his ancestors held us in chattel slavery. Knowing this reality, it did not surprise me nearly 50 years ago when I spoke with one of the few African Americans still living who had endured actual chattel slavery. When I asked him what was the difference between how it was back in those days and how it was then in 1972, he replied, quote, nothing has really changed. It is still the same, unquote. As mentioned in the book, the Holy Quran, God warns us that He will never change the condition of a people until they change what is inside of their minds and their way of thinking. And so the Honorable Marcus Garvey has given us a very strong, strong piece of advice. He says, up you mighty people, you can accomplish what you will. So we're going to close on that note. I know that there are probably some thoughts that you would like to share, but I want you to hold those thoughts and let them percolate in your minds and hearts, because we're going to bring this topic back again next week. But we're going to promote over the internet that we're going to invite all of our family members, white, black, tan, red, brown, even maybe the Orientals. I have Oriental friends as well that live around black people that observe the conditions of black people. And of course, you know, many black people are being served every day by Orientals in the nail shops and the eateries and hair shops and so forth. So they're watching black people. And I have some friends that may want to also come from that community to tell us what they think, because they work closely with us. They see us every day. And of course, our white friends. So we're going to say good night. Thank you all very much for joining our show, Booker T. Washington Speaks, this night and in the nights to come. And we look forward to your participation. So God bless you all. Have a great weekend. I do want to leave with this piece of advice. I'm not an ophthalmologist or an optometrist or an optician, but I do wear eyeglasses, and I've been wearing eyeglasses for a very long time. And the reason why I started wearing eyeglasses when I was 17 years old was because I strained my eyes. And so I suffered from a bad astigmatism. I want to warn y'all about looking directly at the sun. I know you want to see this great natural phenomenon, but there'll be pictures of it. You'll get a chance to see what it looked like. But my advice to you, even with these glasses, some of them are fake. They won't help you at all, but you might buy them because you think you're going to be protected. The best protection, my friends, is do not look directly at the sun at any stage of the eclipse. I don't plan to. I'll know that the eclipse is happening because it's going to be on TV. I'll watch it on TV. That's fine enough for me. So anyway, God bless you all. Thank you very much for listening. And now we're going to conclude. And may you have a good rest of the weekend. Thank you.